They say when a baby is born, so is a mother. But while you are there to help your baby grow into the person he or she is meant to be, who is there to help you? Many women feel lost and alone when they become mothers, wondering, who am I now? Sometimes it feels like the transformation from woman to mother is as radical as a caterpillar's transformation into a butterfly. Did you know that inside the chrysalis, the caterpillar literally turns into goop before it rearranges itself into a butterfly? This podcast is about the goop, what soul transformation looks like as you transition from being a woman to a mom. Your baby's growth matters, but yours does too. You're not alone. I'm your host, Brittany Ming. Welcome to the Motherhood Metamorphosis.
Welcome everyone to this episode of Motherhood Metamorphosis. My name is Brittany Ming, and today I'm talking to Valley Gideons. Valley is the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Through the Fog, Navigating Life's Challenges While Raising Kids with Hearing Loss, and the children's book, Now Hear This, Harper Does with Her Magic Ears. With a degree in journalism, her work has reached millions of people across multiple platforms. Her engaged community, made up of parents and leaders in the field of the deaf and hard of hearing, she is passionate about her role as advocate and champion of children who are deaf and hard of hearing. Welcome, Valley. I'm super glad to talk to you today.
Oh my goodness, that's a mouthful.
Yeah. No, I love just this small introduction to your story. And I want to hear like the beginning and how having your kids with wonderful and unique needs has shaped you as a woman and as a mother.
Well, that is a very hard question to answer because my son is now 17 and he was unexpectedly diagnosed with hearing loss or identified with hearing loss at birth. So we've been kind of going down this road for now over a decade, which is crazy. So, and he's my first, and then my daughter 21 months later was also born with the same syndrome and has hearing loss as well. So for motherhood, it's all I know. So of course it shaped me in every way, but I have nothing to compare it to because 100% of my children are deaf. So I definitely can say that I wouldn't be living a life of advocacy for this community had I not, they were the first deaf people I ever met. So
yeah. Yeah,
for sure that is.
I'm sure, I mean, just you hearing you say, wow, they're the first deaf people I ever met. Like, I'm sure you thought, wow, this motherhood story is not what I expected. Okay, can you tell us about that? That unexpectedness and then leaning into this new path.
Well, the further along we get in this journey, the more I realize nobody ends up having their life and their parenting look as it like they expected it to look. So that's, you know, I realize I'm not any different than any other parent. You have, you know, if you've never been a parent, you have an image in mind what it's going to look like. And then these human beings come out who are designed perfectly the way they were intended to be, not how you expected them to be. And so that's first and foremost. It's like when my son was diagnosed, and I write about it in the book, and it's probably one of the pieces that resonates most with my deaf and hard of hearing community is, he failed the infant hearing screen in the hospital when he was born. And they told us it was probably just fluid in the ear canal. And we would come back in 2 weeks for the more extensive test. And, you know, we'd be told it was all clear, good to go. So we spent those first 2 weeks taking him home, just trying to keep him alive, like any new parent, like overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, we're parents now. We have this newborn and all the things that, you know, burping and changing and sleepless nights and all those things. And so when we came back for that test, we had no idea that we would be leaving with that diagnosis. So we were really caught off guard and we had no family history. Again, it's a syndrome together my husband and I created. So we think we're really special because of that. And after that, I went through a grieving process for what I had imagined motherhood would look like. And having a child was something that I didn't know what it meant to be deaf and hard of hearing. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know if he could still achieve his dreams and all the things. So there was a grief process. And then somewhere along the way, I came to, you know, complete acceptance. And I think it was a gradual thing. And here we are, fully embracing it.
Yeah, I think that when we do, I have kids who have some special needs. One of my sons is autistic, and all four of my sons have ADHD. So by the time my fourth one was diagnosed, his brothers were like, "Welcome to the club, man."
So cute. I love that.
So we laugh about it, but there's also a lot of challenges that come along with having a diagnosis or having a child who has some special challenges in the world, whether it's in their body or in their brain or whatever it may be. And so I think that for me, there was that grief and there was that transition. And I liked how you said, and somewhere along the way, I embraced it and I accepted it. That was the same for me. Like, it's not like I could say, okay, after a month, I was okay with it. Or after 3 years, I really decided to embrace it. I think it's like a slowly opening up of yourself and your heart to this new path. And then you're suddenly you look back and you're like, oh, wow, this is my life now. And this is such a good path to be on with this child.
Yeah. Well said. It's so true. There is no time to sit and just acknowledge I'm in the grief. So I think my grief lasted longer than it probably needed to because, well, we're a military family. My husband just actually retired. He's a career Marine and he just retired as a colonel. And anyways, when my son was born, we had been ordered to a remote location, which means nowhere near a military base. And so it was just the two of us. We had no friends, no family. And then this pregnancy, you have to read the chapter, The Fog. I'm not going to give it all away, but kind of a series of a lot of hard things happened before then my son was born. And then we got this diagnosis. And with my husband not being home a lot because of the Marine Corps, I was just alone and trying to parent this child that had all these appointments and all this responsibility of, you know, language development and keeping devices on and surgeries. And I don't think I took the time to even tell anyone I was feeling these feelings. So I stuffed them down, which I highly recommend not doing. And I'm hoping my book, I really do think, you know, Liz Patrone. Mm-hmm. The author of The Price of Admission. She wrote the foreword to my book and she said it reads like a love letter to a life. Mm. And I really do think I hope it's a love letter to other people's lives that when they read it, they feel they have permission to be feeling these dark, twisty things that nobody wants to say out loud because it somehow makes you feel like if you say you're sad about it or disappointed about it or struggling with it means you might be judged or people might think, well, you love your child less. And in the deaf community, it's a big thing. People say deaf children are not broken. They don't need to be fixed. No, duh. It's like, I've never once looked at my child and thought they were broken or needed to be fixed. But they do have something that makes life challenging. And without accommodations and accessibility, they will struggle big time. So it's not easy breezy. It's mm-hmm. not. And anyone who wants to come at me with that, I'm happy if that's what your experience has been. But for us, you know, it does have challenging things associated with it. And just saying it is okay.
Yeah, because you're human. And that adjustment of saying, this is what I thought motherhood was going to look like. And this is the actual child that I met. And some a huge learning curve. Bigger than just caring for a newborn, bigger than just becoming a mother for the first time is stepping into educating yourself and learning about what it means to have a child who's, would you say deaf? Can you give us some education on that? You say hard of hearing or deaf?
So we say a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Deaf and hard of hearing is probably the most typical language that's used. People will use deaf identity or with a capital D if they are living part of deaf culture, using only sign language, maybe not using hearing technology and spoken language. There's a combination of all the things. My kids got hearing aids as infants and then cochlear implants before age 2 and have just gravitated and excelled at spoken language. My daughter did know sign language as a preschooler but dropped it. Now I'm begging them to take sign language again, and they will not. They have no interest in it. They're 15 and 17, and it's like, wow. they really get to own this, you know.
I can. Yeah, they're creating their own experience right now as as their identity.
So on the subtitle that you read is Navigating Life's Challenges While Raising Kids with Hearing Loss. And I had someone say, just curious why you didn't use deaf or hard of hearing in that subtitle, you used hearing loss. And I really wrestled with that subtitle because you're trying to say so much about your story in such a short, you know, little blurb. And I finally turned to my kids and I said, what words should I use to describe deaf, hard of hearing, hearing loss, hearing impaired, all the things that people call it? And they're like, well, we used to use hearing loss. I'm like, okay, I'm going to use what you use. Because you get to name it because it's your disability.
Yeah.
And so that's what I said to this person, and who was like, oh, interesting. They weren't, you know, coming at me because they said, I use deaf. And I'm like, well, my kids use all the things, but hearing loss, they thought just more said it. They see it. So.
Yeah. I have a similar story about that. My son is 14 and there's so much language around autistic person with autism, like always use person first language, never use person first language, always like don't ever say autistic, use person with autism. And finally I was like, I actually stopped writing about it for a while because people got really angry about the language. Or I even had an article dropped from a website once because I used the word autistic, or I used like high functioning, which that gets people really upset too. And I'm like, that was the language that was given to us at our diagnosis. I'm just trying to be descriptive. I'm not trying to be prescriptive. And I finally asked him, I'm like, what do you prefer? Do you prefer a person with autism or autistic? And he's like, I'm autistic. And I'm like, well, what would you say if someone came at you and said person with autism? And he said, I would say, do you want to be friends? Because I'm a really friendly person. And I'm like, I know that you didn't quite understand my question, but like, I love that answer more than anything else. And I think that people just want to say like, I want you to see me for a person. And
oh my gosh, I love him.
Yeah. He's a tender soul. And I love him with all my heart. So.
Yeah. And you're doing a good job, mama, because a kid that says that is being raised to really just believe in themselves. And that's a lot of confidence for a young man to say that. I try just to not get too caught up in the terms. I've evolved and changed, which I hope all humans, you know, if we're growing and living, we should be evolving and changing. And so there's things that terminology I might have used 5-10 years ago that are really cringeworthy to me now, but it's, you know, language changes. And now my kids are old enough that they get to name it. The person with the disability gets to name it. And I'm not telling you what words you should use, because if something else feels better for you, then use it. But as a parent of a child who is deaf, before they had the language, I was naming it. And so sometimes maybe crossing over those boundaries and that line of what was my place. I used to call myself a special needs mother. That special needs word was really buzzed and thrown around. Now I would never use that word. My kids just think it's ugh. And the more I read about adults with disabilities, they also say they don't like that word.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I'm going to listen to you. If you don't like it, it does not feel good. I can just take it out of my, and I don't really see myself as that anymore anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just trying to find my identity in this whole process probably too.
Yeah.
Early on.
So we talked about that transition, that time of grief, and how you eventually just said, okay, like this is my story. So when did you start feeling like you again? And how did you know?
I am still waiting.
I love that answer.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means. I am not who I was before this, but I think writing, so you're getting me through, it's been a very reflective period the last couple of years writing this book and laying it all out, because I began just to want to put together some essays that would be encouraging for any parent whose child is newly diagnosed with hearing loss. And that was really my objective. But then as I started to fold more of myself into it, it became about so much more. Mm-hmm. Hence the very hard subtitle. Life's challenges. Okay. That means I grew up in a military family. My dad died of a very young age of cancer. And then being a military wife, and I had an eating disorder, and I had my own diagnosis of cancer. And then I had these two children born with all these extra needs. I could look in retrospect that all these other things prepared me to have the endurance to do this.
Hmm. Yeah. I love that, because we are bringing our whole selves into our motherhood story, and that doesn't look like anybody else's. So we can have these touch points where we relate to other women, but we can't say, I'm going to find myself in her story, because we can only find ourselves in our own story and how everything has shaped us, like both the really, really good parts and the really, really crappy parts where we have to like overcome our trauma or work through our own stuff, but also the strengths that come into raising these unique people that we've given birth to.
Yeah. That's exactly, you just hit the nail on the head. It's, I can say in retrospect, or, you know, having perspective is just, oh, I love it so much. I just love the stage we're in now, because I really can look back and reflect. There's so much wisdom there. Not that I'm old and wise, but it's all happened for a reason. And I know that's cliche, but all the hard, all the things that I thought would kill me ended up being all by design. And one of the biggest ones was when we got orders to Cleveland, Ohio, all aka known as the mistake by the lake. And I left Southern California for Cleveland. I gave up, and I use the word gave up, even though that's not a term military spouses are supposed to use, but I had a career that I was so filled up by. Being of service to others and just living my dream. And then we got orders to the mistake by the lake. And this is where the whole hearing loss journey began. And it's not till years and years and years later, I look back at that time, and we had access to world-class healthcare, one of the best geneticists in the country, one of the best auditory verbal therapist in the country. I mean, and I also had a circle of friends that became like a sisterhood of helping me through that early stage. So I'm like, there are no mistakes. As much as it seemed like, you know, just despair having to go to this place, it ended up being exactly where we were supposed to be. And I just can look back at, you have to in military life, because you are ordered to go places. You have to figure out a way to find the best in every place. You have to, or you'll just be miserable.
Yeah, I'm a military wife. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I do know that. Yeah, that's like, why you should...
You're preaching to me right now, because this has not been the best location for me.
But 10 years from now, you will look back and you'll find some little nugget. It might not be, some are better than others, for sure. For sure. For me, what I ended up, every move, I would be hesitant to say, this time I don't have the energy in me to get connected and to really settle in. Why bother? We're just leaving anyways. And then every time I would let go of that, like, okay, that is just no way to live. And then we'd end up moving and I'd be crying because I was going to miss something about it.
Yeah.
Every time, every single time. There's places you could not make me go back.
Yeah, you're like, no, not again. But, you know, when we lived there, I was crying after we, I learned to love it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you know, I mean, I write about military life in this book that, I mean, that's been a big part of this journey, is being a military spouse, relocating all the time, and also having a spouse that was deployed a lot. I feel like military spouses sometimes try to put on this, like, martyr veneer, and I think it's changing, the new crop of military spouses, but it's, again, it's like we're afraid to say it's hard because somehow it'll make us seem not supportive or patriotic, that we can't, you know, we can be both. We can be a supportive wife or partner and also say, this is hard.
I think that is so true in military life, and it is so true of motherhood. And especially if you have a child who does have extra needs, because yeah. It's easy to feel alone. It's easy to feel like no one else has gone through this. Can you talk to me about the community you found through this and being a hearing person in the deaf community or hard of hearing community?
Oh my gosh. I love the community that I'm a part of, the career, and that I've also created across my own platforms. I have met the most amazing advocates and heroes. So mostly I'm connected to the mothers and the professionals that support and champion for deaf and hard of hearing kiddos versus my kids don't really have a large deaf community that they are connected to, which makes me sad, but they're not seeking it. So there's only so much, again, I can do in that arena. But I think I've just learned we're stronger together. And again, I think you said it, our stories are very different, but there's so much that's the same. Mm-hmm. And so if we can create spaces where people can say, this is hard, or I'm sad, or I'm angry, or I'm happy, I'm joyful, and have other people nodding their heads, then I think that's the way we're designed to be as humans, right? Is we need someone nodding their head going, yes, uh-huh. I hear you. I hear you. I would say at this point, that's where I find the most joy is through these people. And then just being able to turn our story into a platform that now connects others. And every time someone sends a picture of their little kid with our children's book that we wrote it, me and my daughter wrote it together. And they send pictures with their kids with the book, and they say, Harper's, you know, she's a rock star in our house, and they've done book reports on her. And yeah, I just say, yes, it was all meant to be, because we took something that was hard and turned it into something that now can help others.
Mm-hmm. And create community. And I hear you saying, as you keep talking about your new book, that I hear you saying that you want this book to create that kind of community for mothers or parents who are coming up into this the first time, like coming into their story for the first time. So as a mom is thinking about picking up her book, what would you hope her book would tell her if she's walking the same path that you did?
There's so many different avenues that I've gone down. So you could have grown up on in a military family. And I talk about being the new kid that might, or you might've been a new kid because your parent, you know, your mom or dad traveled for work and you moved all the time. Or so I talk about that. I talk about a thread that is throughout that. I thank you to my dad up above. And I, again, this revealed itself as the manuscript was coming together, is how much he taught me by example about how to give grace. Mm. And it's so overused now. I get it. Like, give grace. No, but he truly exemplified it. He gave it so freely and modeled it. And those lessons, I had no idea those lessons would stay with me. So I give grace to others pretty openly, but I had to learn through practice to give it to myself. And I tell lots of stories about different times in my life that I just spoke to myself in a way I would never speak to others. And so that kind of self-compassion, and it was revealed to me on a yoga mat, kind of this language I had used towards myself that I was finally acknowledging and ready to take myself into a therapy room and let go of. And, you know, if you're a military spouse, again, I think part of the honesty of it will resonate because I don't wrap it up in a pretty bow about how hard it, you know, it's been hard being a military spouse with two kids. Has not been easy, but I can wrap it all up and say I wouldn't change it. So I close with writing a letter to myself, what I would have told her all those years ago. There's just so many lessons. So I think there's just, if you're a human, there's something in there that'll hopefully you'll connect with or it'll resonate with you in some way. I've had so many messages that have made me cry, like go in the fetal position. But one of my favorites was, she's an adult I've become friends with who's hard of hearing, and she read it and she messaged me saying, I can't quit crying for how much I love my mom and appreciate what she must have gone through. And she goes, I'm buying her a copy too.
Oh, that's so tender.
It gave her a new insight to maybe what her mom had felt. And so I just loved that. And then my own mom sent me a text that, oh my God, it'll make me bawl if I say it. But she got the book and she wouldn't read it. I was so nervous. I was like, Mom, finally, I texted her and I said, Mom, have you read it? She goes, I've had it and I'm afraid to start reading it. I was afraid to start reading it because I knew I would cry every part, particularly about your dad. And she goes, I read it and I was right. I cried and I'm so proud of you. And I know my kids love me. I've never needed to be in the limelight, which I talk about in my story. She said, but Dad would be so proud of you too. Mm. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
You're like, we'll talk about this later. Not right now.
But I just love that I could express so much love to my mom in gentle kind of ways throughout a manuscript and let her read it and tell her everything I'd want her to know. I really highly encourage every person to write a manuscript, whether you publish it or not, to be able to say the things to the people who have meant something in your life. I've mentioned teachers and therapists and my best friends from college and high school and grade school and all those people. Like, I'm so like grateful that I've been able to tell them what they've meant to me. Like, I highly recommend it.
So this is your love letter to your life and all the people who have meant the most to you. I love it. I love hearing all the people that you hope will read it and be encouraged by it. And I hope that people who are listening will check it out. So thank you for sharing about it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brittany. I'm so happy to meet you.
Yeah. Well, I like to end up our time on the podcast with these 10 rapid fire questions that are just for fun.
Oh dear. Hold on. I'm sweating.
No, don't worry. They really are. They're not hard. So the first one is, which Disney princess would you want to take out to coffee?
Moana. Is that Disney? Okay.
Yeah, it is. I love Moana. I think you're the first person to say her, but I would totally take her out to
coffee. My daughter Harper wants to be Moana. She is Moana. Yeah.
Like, I would take Harper and Moana out.
Yeah.
A triple date. What's one thing you must have on your nightstand?
A book.
Always a book. Yep. Or the stack, the to-be-read stack.
I was just telling someone, who was it? I can only get through one page of a book lately and I'm asleep. Like, I can't get through a book lately. It puts me right to sleep, which is, I guess, good, but because we're not.
I want to read, but I want to sleep.
Yeah, but so I love books. I have them everywhere.
Yep. What's your go-to treat either now or maybe when the kids were little after your kids would go to bed?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember because now they go to bed after me.
That's right. That's the great thing about having teenagers, or the bad thing about having teenagers. You're like, good night.
Yeah, they tuck me in. Probably I used to watch a recorded show that was not appropriate for children.
Yeah.
Sex in the City, maybe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. An ordinary moment that brings you great joy.
Walking my dogs every day along the beach trail here.
Where do you live now?
San Clemente, California.
That's a great image.
Yeah, every day.
The last show you binged and loved.
Oh, what did we binge and love? Oh, so I can't remember the name of it. We watched it with our kids. It was only one season's out. And it's Korean, and it's about these kids. Everybody dies, or we're all going to die, and it's about zombies.
So a zombie show, did you guys you loved it?
We loved it for different reasons, but I love anything show we can now find that the kids can equally like.
Yes, I think that's a unique experience. I've just started watching Cobra Kai on Netflix with my teenage boys, and it's the first kind of grown-up show that I've watched with them, but I'm like, I need a new way to connect with them, and it's been really good. So I resonate with that, that when you can find that show that you all like, you're like, this is the holy grail of the show.
Absolutely. My daughter and I have a lot of shows we like together, but to find something all four of us, we were actually skiing in the mountains. And we stayed up one night way too late because we couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, great. But I can't tell you the name. It's wacky.
Yeah. If you run out of this besides milk, you have to go to the store.
Diet Coke.
Diet Coke. Yep. You gotta have it. Who makes you laugh?
Who makes me laugh? My two best friends that I Marco Polo with every day. One in particular, Belinda, she makes me laugh.
Yeah. Great to have friends like that. When you were 5 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be an actress or a teacher.
Have you done any acting or any teaching?
I did do acting, and I was an extra when I was in school in LA, and that's as far as it went, and I did end up being a coach, an exercise instructor all since I was 15. And then I ended up coaching endurance athletes for many, many years as like one of my things I did for the YMCA. So
I guess
I did kind of teach.
Yeah. I love this question because you can see how people's dreams have morphed. Sometimes they are exactly the same. Like they ended up doing what their little child heart wanted. And sometimes it like shifts into something different, but you can usually see a thread that goes. So I think that like our little child hearts tell us who we are and what we want in life.
Well, in second grade, I think this is how I opened my book, telling the story of Mrs. Shem, my second grade teacher, who told me I could be a professional writer. Because I wrote creative stories, but I didn't really think I could do that. I didn't really know. You know, it's like when you're a kid, you don't know you can actually do that and make a living. Well, no, you can't actually make a living as a writer.
Really?
But when you find out how to make a living doing it, let me know.
Yeah, same. I'm very curious. All right. What are you looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to? Okay. What month is it? March and April, we're going to Maine. My whole family. I've been invited to speak at a conference. And I'm bringing my kids along and they're going to speak with me.
Oh, that's really exciting.
And my husband's agreed to be on a parent panel. We're going to also go to New England and we're going to look at colleges in Boston. And so that's probably the thing that's coming soonest that I think will be different and fun and embarrassing. I don't know if I can speak in front of my kids. It'll be hard.
Like they are the toughest critics. It's not like just other parents.
They'll be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
They'll be so embarrassed.
All right. Last one. Finish this sentence. Motherhood is
an endurance sport.
Mm. Amen. I hear you on that. I'm in the thick of it.
Yes, you are.
Yep. Well, if you would like to follow Valley on social media, you can find about more of her family's journey at mybattlecall.com and on Facebook and Instagram at mybattlecall. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Valley. I'm really excited to share about your book, and I hope everybody who listens will check it out.
Thanks, Brittany. So nice to have this conversation.
Hey, friends. I'm so glad you chose to spend your time listening to this episode today. I hope it encouraged you and gave you some good food for thought. In 2022, I want to keep bringing thought-provoking, soul-affirming, high-quality content to you. In order to do this, I want to ask for your support. If you're loving this podcast, write a review in Apple Podcasts or leave some stars in Spotify. In the wonderful world of social algorithms, this is how new listeners will find the podcast. Next, tell your friends. If you know another mom who is in the goop right now, send her a text of encouragement and a link to the episode that is speaking to your heart right now. I'd also love to have you join us over on our Facebook page. You can find it by searching for the Motherhood Metamorphosis Podcast. Finally, you can dig deeper into the podcast by becoming a Patreon supporter. I'd love to have you listen in on a bonus solo episodes, which air on the last Monday of each month. I share stories about my own motherhood journey and practical insights about how to navigate your own transformation and growth. You can find the Patreon account at patreon.com/themotherhoodmetamorphosis. Thank you again for listening and for all your support of this podcast. If you ever have any questions, comments, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email me at brittanyaming@gmail.com.
Are you in your closet?
I am. This is my office. Welcome to my recording studio.
Oh my God, I love it. So, anywho, that is just kind of how it began. And I lost my train of thought. I have mom brain.
I realize mom brain. Yes.
I always say this to my friend Jody. I think I have holes in my brain. Like, there was a real point in why I started telling you that story. And now I have no idea why I was telling you that story.